Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Out front next, the Justice Department revealing new details tonight about its investigation into Trump, as we learned that Merrick Garland reportedly deliberated for weeks over approving that search warrant. Also this hour, a key Trump White House lawyer is subpoenaed to testify before a federal grand jury. Plus, Rudy Giuliani, now a confirmed target in Georgia's criminal investigation into Trump's efforts to overturn the election there. So will he turn on the bigger target, Trump? And famed historian John Meacham is my guest tonight. What is he warning President Biden about? Let's go out front. And good evening. I'm Erin Burnett. Out front tonight, the Justice Department fighting back, saying that releasing their full reasons for searching Mar-a-Lago would cause, and I quote, significant and irreparable damage. The Justice Department now urging a judge not to unseal the affidavit that justified the FBI search of Trump's Mar-a-Lago home. A document, according to the DOJ, that serves as a roadmap to the government's ongoing investigation, including who federal investigators are talking to, saying that it includes, and I want to quote this one, highly sensitive information about witnesses, including witnesses interviewed by the government. That is witnesses, not witness, witnesses, plural. According to David Laufman, the former chief of the Justice Department's counterintelligence section, who oversaw the investigation of Hillary Clinton's handling of classified documents, that plural, witnesses, means that multiple people told the DOJ there was still classified information at Mar-a-Lago. Multiple people. I'm going to speak to David Laufman in just a moment. The Justice Department is also arguing that redacting those names and other highly classified information would be, well, basically a waste. They're writing that the redactions necessary to mitigate harms to the integrity of the investigation would be so extensive as to render the remaining unsealed text devoid of meaningful content. So according to the government, if they were to cross out everything classified or crucial to their investigation, you know, that wouldn't cause irreparable harm, you basically would just be looking at page after page after page of black, almost complete redactions. You may remember what that looked like in the Mueller report on those pages, the fully redacted pages of the Mueller report that we held up so many times, just boxes and boxes and boxes of black saying harm to ongoing matter. And this is another important line from today's filing. According to the Justice Department, keeping the affidavit sealed is vital not only to this investigation, okay, but others. So let me read you that line. It says, disclosure of the government's affidavit at this stage would also likely chill future cooperation by witnesses whose assistance may be sought as this investigation progresses, as well as in other high-profile investigations. My emphasis, but you get the point. Other high-profile investigations, so not just this one into the documents, but others. Again, the plural. Now, we, of course, already know of several high-profile investigations underway. One of them, of course, is Trump's attempt to overturn the 2020 election. And today, a major move by the DOJ in that investigation, which we should note at this point from the probe is completely separate at this time from Trump's handling of classified documents. The DOJ today, though, subpoenaing Eric Hirschman, one of Trump's top lawyers. Now, we learned during the January 6th Select Committee hearings that Hirschman was in the room for some of the most consequential meetings that Trump had about overturning the election. Here is a clip of his testimony about a conversation that he had with John Eastman, who you may recall was the architect behind Trump's attempt to overturn the election via fake electors.
I said to him, are you out of your effing mind? Right? I said, I only want to hear two words coming out of your mouth for now on. Orderly transition. And then he screamed and said, I don't want to hear any other effing words coming out of your mouth, no matter what, other than orderly transition. Repeat those words to me. And I screamed that. Eventually he said, orderly transition. I said, good, John. Now I'm going to give you the best free legal advice you're ever getting in your life. Get a great effing criminal defense lawyer. You're going to need it.
There is a lot to get to tonight. So let's begin with Evan Perez, OutFront Live in Washington with breaking details. And Evan, I know you have been talking to your sources. What more are you learning about the DOJ's objection to releasing the affidavit, right? All the underlying reasons that they presented to a judge in order to get that search warrant from Mar-a-Lago.
Well, Aaron, we know that in addition to witnesses, that the FBI and the prosecutors were using other investigative methods to try to gather this evidence. They knew before they even talked to some of these witnesses, they had reason to believe that there were additional documents, highly sensitive documents, that were still at Mar-a-Lago. And that's the reason why they felt that they needed to take this extraordinary step. And look, we know that this is an Attorney General, Merrick Garland, who, you know, is very cautious, right? Everything he does, he, you know, looks at and spends time reviewing before he takes these steps, especially something that is as politically charged as this. And so one of the things we know is that, you know, from this filing, you can tell that they're trying to project to the world, essentially, that this is the reason why we took this extraordinary step, which is that there is highly sensitive material, stuff that, frankly, I think might make this case very difficult for prosecutors to even bring in court. There's a lot of steps that between where this search that occurred on last Monday and the day they come and they decide whether they're going to bring charges or not. One of the things they're going to have to do is decide whether this information, this classified information, they can even use to bring a case in court. There's a lot of things that the prosecutors are going to have to do before they make that decision. But again, this filing today really does give you the sense that some of the things that they found in these boxes, not only back in the first time they retrieved them, but in this last search, were highly sensitive materials that they don't want the public to see.
All right, Evan Perez, thank you very much from Washington. And I want to come now to Andrew McCabe, former FBI deputy director, and David Loffman, former chief of the Law Justice Department's counterintelligence section. So thanks so much to both of you. David, let me start with you because I mentioned your view on this. When we read the DOJ filing today, they talk about witnesses, plural. What does that mean to you?
I mean, it signifies to me, Aaron, that there's more than one person who told the government that despite the president's statements to the Justice Department, directly or through intermediaries, that there was, in fact, classified information and other presidential records that remained at Mar-a-Lago. And somebody was telling them something that was untrue. It was either the lawyers, you know, unwittingly channeling information fed to them by Trump that he knew was untrue, but they didn't. Or the lawyers were a party to a false statement to the Justice Department themselves.
So, Deputy Director, the DOJ mentions these highly classified documents. They use that word, highly classified. Sure. And they say that they would have to black out so much of the affidavit, of these underlying reasons that they used to get the search warrant, that there wouldn't be anything left to read.
That's right.
It'd just be like chunks and chunks of black. What does that tell you?
There's a lot of meat on this bone. There's a lot of information in this affidavit. There are pieces of, there are descriptions of highly classified material. So all of that is going to be subject to redaction. But in addition to those references to classified material, there are statements from witnesses that could be used to identify those people and not person. We now know from the use of the plural term, there's more than one witness that told the Bureau what they saw at Mar-a-Lago and indicated that there was classified information there. So in order to protect the integrity of the investigation, to protect that information, but also the identity of those witnesses, they are not going to let any of that information.
So they're going to fight this tooth and nail. So,
absolutely.
So, David, when we get to the timeline here, you mentioned Trump's attorneys, right? They signed a letter, we have found out, in June. And in this letter, they signed it. This is a legal right document. There was no more classified information at Mar-a-Lago. You got it all. Now, it was signed by Trump's attorney, not by Trump himself. So when you look at cases like this, I know you've prosecuted some. Who is responsible? Can Trump hide behind that or not?
I mean, if Donald Trump told his lawyer to say something to the government that Donald Trump knew was untrue, or told someone else to tell the lawyer to tell the government something that Donald Trump knew was untrue, Donald Trump has criminal jeopardy for a potential false statement, a felony. I prosecuted cases against Chinese companies lying to us about having shipped U.S. origin goods to Iran, having lied about having stopped shipping. And they had to eat a felony at the end of the day when they pled guilty to a case. So the facts remain to be seen. There's going to be more investigation undertaken by the Bureau in the department to unpack what happened. But someone has criminal jeopardy, it seems to me, with respect to the false representations made that preceded the execution of the search warrant.
So, Deputy Attorney General, we're reporting tonight, Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, thought about this for weeks, okay? So we're going to presume to get you back to June when they get this letter. They've got witnesses telling them this is not true. But the timeline overall is that initially, it was 15 months ago in May of 2021 that the National Archives goes to Trump and says, hey, can you give us back the stuff? We're missing stuff.
That's right.
And here we are 15 months later, and you get this letter in June from the lawyer saying, you got it all. Still not true. When you go through the timeline here, is there any way that this was not intentional deceit by the former president?
It seems really, really hard to believe that. And the first flag that jumps out at me in that timeline is go back to what you just said. So it starts in May of 2021. National Archives is asking for their stuff back. They go back and forth for 6 months. And it's in January of 22 that someone at Mar-a-Lago presumably goes through what they have and sends the archives 15 boxes of material. We now know that in addition to those 15, they retained 33 boxes is what the Bureau pulled out of Mar-a-Lago last week. So a decision was made to retain the stuff that the Bureau sees.
Right, they didn't just randomly go every other.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, so there was a about what was going to be kept
right.
and what wasn't.
That's right. At that point, you lose the ability to say, oh, it was just a mistake. You know, the movers, they put things in boxes on the day we left the White House and nobody knew it was there. At least in January, there was a proactive decision. Let's give these 15 over and we'll keep these 33 back.
Right. And there was an intent and some sort of a sort question.
Some
is, again,
sort of
who
sort.
Said what and who drove that? I mean, David, this is on the same time, and again, we talk about other investigations that they reference that this could cause damage to other high-profile investigations. They don't say what they are, so I'm not trying to link it directly to January 6th, but that is another high-profile investigation that is going on at the DOJ. And in that, White House lawyer Eric Hirschman was subpoenaed in the January 6th investigation. So how important is Hirschman?
I think it's pretty important. I think Hirschman was party to conversations either directly with the president or with people who were in direct contact with the president. And Hirschman can probably deliver to the government a grand jury testimony, statements attributable to the president that will come in either as non-hearsay admissions or potentially as statements by a co-conspirator in furtherance of a conspiracy and come in through a hearsay exception. So what the department is trying to get at is evidence regarding Trump's state of mind, statements he made to others, directions he gave to others, because all that is extremely valuable in evaluating whether charges against Trump are ultimately warranted.
So, Deputy Director, what do you make of their reference? You know, we talk about the plurals in here, plural in witnesses, plural in other investigations, that releasing this affidavit could jeopardize other investigations. What do you read, other high-profile investigations, sorry,
sure.
What do you read into that?
So there's the general concern that if you take a step that puts your witnesses in peril, that could have a chilling effect on other people who might be considering becoming witnesses in this or other cases. So from a very broad level, you would always make a statement like that. But there's also the possibility that they have witnesses who have cooperated in the context of the Mar-a-Lago documents seizure who are maybe also providing them information about other things the government is investigating, possibly January 6th, possibly things we're not even aware of at this point.
All right. Thank you very much, Deputy Director David. I appreciate your time. And next, Trump's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, informed by Georgia prosecutors that he is a target of their criminal investigation into efforts to overturn the election. So how worried should Trump then be? Plus, videos of people talking about civil war threatening the FBI have been popping up more and more on the popular media platform TikTok. Tonight, TikTok's response. And the warning, America's democracy hanging by a thread. That from Pulitzer Prize-winning historian John Meacham, who recently met with President Biden to discuss American democracy. I'll talk to him about his fears for America's future. A major development tonight in the Georgia criminal investigation into Trump's efforts to overturn the election. Top Trump ally Rudy Giuliani is now a confirmed target of that criminal probe. Now, this is according to one of Giuliani's own attorneys, who says the Fulton County District Attorney's Office told him that in a call earlier today. And another lawyer for Giuliani telling our Gloria Borger, quote, if they want to play hardball, we know how to play hardball. Sarah Murray is out front. She's been covering every bit of this story. So, Sarah, just how significant is this development, a confirmed target, and how much trouble could it mean for Donald Trump?
Well, look, it's significant because Rudy Giuliani is the closest advisor to the former president who has been called a target that we know of in any of the investigations surrounding former President Trump. And it seems pretty clear from these target, you know, letters and calls that the district attorney's office has made that she is looking at potentially issuing multiple indictments in her Georgia investigation. We don't know yet if one of those indictments could potentially be an indictment of the former president. You know, we know they have been interested in Rudy Giuliani because he appeared multiple times before Georgia lawmakers in the wake of the 2020 election, and he spread conspiracies about the results of the 2020 election. What we don't know is how much information Giuliani could provide the prosecutors about Donald Trump's role in all of this. Bob Costello made it pretty clear to CNN today that if they ask Rudy Giuliani any questions when he appears before the special grand jury on Wednesday about Giuliani's conversations with former President Trump, Giuliani's not going to answer them. Costello said it's delusional if prosecutors think that Giuliani is going to go before a grand jury and answer questions about his former client. Aaron.
All right, Sarah Murray, thank you very much. And I want to go now to David Kelly, former U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. He served in that office as an assistant U.S. attorney for then U.S. attorney Rudy Giuliani. So 3 decades of knowing him, of course, and our chief White House correspondent, Caitlin Collins. So thanks to both of you. David, let me start with you, because you have known Rudy Giuliani for more than 3 decades. Just how worried do you think he should be right now that he is a confirmed target?
Well, let's just break it down for a second, Aaron. So in a criminal investigation, a grand jury investigation, people fall into one of 3 categories. You're either a witness, which means you're essentially a bystander, a subject, which means you've been at the party, or a target, which means just that, which is you have literally a bullseye on your back, and you've been told that you are the focus of the grand jury investigation, which essentially means you're about to be indicted, you have incoming, and you need to do something about it quickly. And most oftentimes, there's not much you can do about it. So it's the worst thing, the worst nightmare for a defense lawyer to hear on the other end of the phone, a prosecutor telling you your client is a target of a criminal investigation.
And that's the news Rudy Giuliani got today. Now, Caitlin, you know, Sarah Murray's talking about how there could be multiple indictments in the Georgia criminal investigation. Obviously, we just don't know. But when you look at Rudy Giuliani and his close relationship with the former president, you wonder about Trump. How much of a threat does Donald Trump's inner circle consider this investigation in Georgia from your conversations with your sources?
I think they certainly consider it a threat. And I think a big part of it is because of who is now the target, Rudy Giuliani, who, even as he was in the middle of peddling these conspiracy theories about the election back in the aftermath of the election, some people in Trump's orbit were kind of rolling their eyes at Rudy Giuliani and certainly distancing themselves from him. And a lot of Republican allies of the president's would not take his phone calls because they didn't want to be involved in the efforts that Rudy Giuliani was involved in. And so, of course, while you are being named to target, it does not mean that you are going to be indicted definitely. It just means prosecutors think that they can actually potentially get to an indictment. Mm. I think it raises a lot of concerns for Trump as well. And so the questions that people have when it comes to Rudy Giuliani about his efforts here was also, you know, what is going to be the line drawn of what Trump was urging him to do and what he was actually doing in Georgia? Because we know we saw him coming out saying that he believed ballots had been smuggled in suitcases, that underage teenagers had voted, neither of those things of which were true. And so I think that raises a concern. But Rudy Giuliani and his attorney have said they're not going to talk about his conversations between he and Trump on Wednesday because of attorney-client privilege.
Right. And, of course, question of how much he'll plead the fifth all the way through or not. I mean, David, it appears Trump was obviously involved with the efforts to overturn Georgia's election results. I mean, he said so himself, right? I mean, here just is a few instances from his conversation with the Republican Secretary of State of Georgia, Brad Raffensperger, that infamous 40-minute call. Here are just a few of the things he said.
The people of the country are angry, and there's nothing wrong with saying that, you know, that you've recalculated. All I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have, because we won the state, and flipping the state is a great testament to our country. So what are we going to do here, folks? I only need 11,000 votes. Fellas, I need 11,000 votes.
Obviously, that's the infamous line. But the question is, David, if Giuliani is now a target of this probe, the only person he could, quote unquote, flip on right? The only person above him would seem to be Trump. I mean, is Trump going to be the real target here, do you think?
Well, I think it's hard to say with a tape like that that he's not a target of the investigation. The question is, what were the conversations he was having with others? What direction he gave to others? Whether or not there's an agreement among others to actually improperly influence Georgia to come up with those votes improperly. I wouldn't bet on Rudy Giuliani being the person who rats him out if there is some conversations to be had. And like, you know, it's been already said, I think he's going to refuse to answer questions if put in that position, either under the attorney-client privilege, which frankly could probably be pierced because there's something called the crime fraud exception. Whether or not the conditions really were, or the conversations were such that they are really are privileged. But I think the expectation would be if he put in front of a grand jury, he would probably, invoke the Fifth, or he would otherwise claim some sort of privilege. I think that the greater chances would be, you know, a dialogue not between Rudy and the prosecutor so much as perhaps Rudy's lawyer and the prosecutors to see if there's some sort of accommodations that could be made, some information that could be proffered that's not attributed to Giuliani, but that's something that really needs to be worked out.
And, you know, Caitlin, you talked about some of the things that Rudy Giuliani did, right? I mean, I just played some of the things Donald Trump said, but some of the things that Rudy Giuliani was alleging, right? Here's what he was saying in public, some of the really baseless allegations he was making.
They look like they're passing out dope, not just ballots. It is quite clear they're stealing votes.
The people in Fulton County were instructed not to look at signatures. Not only do you have testimony to that effect, you have film that shows you them not looking at the signature. Doing this. Do you have the courage to stand up to the obligation the Constitution of the United States put on you to save our people from fraud? Do you have the courage to put up with what's going to happen if you, in fact, change that certification and do the right thing?
So, Caitlin, what is the perception among those close to Trump? You know, the passing out dope, not just ballots, and you referenced the allegations about underage people voting, things that Giuliani knew were not true, and he still said anyway. Did he do that on his own, or was Trump directing it?
I think we saw publicly Trump encouraging people to watch Rudy Giuliani when he would testify for hours about this in front of those hearings, those sham hearings, really about their claims about election fraud that were unfounded. And I think, you know, one of the things here that I've heard from people in recent months in the former president's orbit is that, you know, Rudy Giuliani's attorneys had been asking repeatedly if he was a target in this investigation. Clearly, they were concerned about it. Of course, now today they found out that he was. And what I had heard from people is that this is really the investigation that has concerned them the most, the former president, that is, and his attorneys as well, because they do realize, I think, how intense the legal pressure is becoming from this, and not only on Rudy Giuliani today, but also Lindsey Graham not getting out of being called to testify also. And so I think that's what raises the questions. And I do think that is something they'll be pursuing, is just how entangled what Rudy Giuliani was saying and what Trump was saying were. Of course, we know how much they were meeting. And I think that's a big question and a huge factor in this as well.
All right. Caitlin, David, thank you both very much. And next, the FBI tonight charging a man who threatened to kill FBI agents after the search of Trump's Mar-a-Lago home. The disturbing messages that he posted online, plus the threats to American democracy, have Pulitzer Prize-winning historian John Meacham worried. In fact, he was just at the White House to discuss that issue with President Biden. He's out front next. Tonight, the Justice Department charging a man in Pennsylvania who allegedly threatened to kill FBI agents after the search of Trump's home, Mar-a-Lago. Investigators say that the man posted a series of threats online in just the past few days, saying, quote, "I sincerely believe that if you work for the FBI, then you deserve to die." And quote, "My only goal is to kill more of them before I drop." This comes as CNN learns the FBI is investigating an unprecedented number of threats against Bureau personnel, and that a lot of this violent rhetoric is circulating on the social media platform TikTok. Donnie O'Sullivan is out front. And Donnie, you have been watching all of these videos, combing through these threats on social media. What are you seeing?
Hey, Erin. Yeah, look, I mean, It's very difficult to quantify because there are so many different platforms. A lot of these messages get removed. There are very dark corners of the internet. But certainly, I think for anybody who watches this closely, as many of us do, the tone and tenor of the discussion online has changed dramatically since this time last week on this very show when the news broke of that Trump, of the search of Mar-a-Lago. On TikTok specifically, we have seen a lot of videos of people posing with weapons. People, you know, showing their guns, showing their automatic rifles, some of them talking about being ready to go to fight, to go for to civil war. Some people saying there's going to be a fight if they come after Trump. It's on. And that is reflective across many platforms. But on TikTok, we saw many, many examples.
So what is, I mean, this is only one step of the process, but what is TikTok doing about this? I would imagine in a sense it's just a game of whack-a-mole.
Yeah, whack-a-mole indeed. And sometimes, you know, we've seen these platforms be on the back foot before. At TikTok, we asked them about some videos today and they told us we have already removed the content and banned accounts as violent extremism. And violent extremism and disinformation have no place on or off TikTok. That is what a spokesperson told us. But look, why does all of this matter? And, you know, we know that a lot of this, of course, is just online talk. It's rhetoric. But we also know that, you know, on a lot of these forums, particularly on the real pro-Trump forums, that is where people in the days and weeks leading up to January 6th were hanging out. That is what they were posting about violence. And then they went on to commit violent acts.
That's right. Sometimes it is not just words. And we've seen it. Donny, thank you very much. I want to bring in John Meacham now, Pulitzer Prize winning historian who occasionally advises President Biden. And he is the author of the upcoming book, And There Was Light, Abraham Lincoln and the American Struggle. He recently met with Biden to discuss the rise in threats to American democracy, which, John, I know you've warned is, quote, hanging by a thread. So I just want to ask you, in the context of some of these threats that Donny was just going through, FBI agents, quote, deserve to die. There's going to be a fight if they come after Trump. It's on. The FBI says that the number of threats that they're seeing now is unprecedented. Just in the past week after the search of Mar-a-Lago. Does this surprise you in any way, John?
It disappoints and frightens me. Surprise, not so much, partly because we're living in this era where extremism has been, to some extent, brought into the light. For a long time in American life, political violence, extremist views, at least were part of the conversation, but a little bit to the side. They've been mainstreamed in many ways, and I think that one of the things we have to confront, and this is a matter for leaders and presidents and citizens, certainly journalists as well, is we have to remember what is it about the rule of law? What is it about, however flawed it may be, the constitutional conversation that makes it worth preserving and defending? Yeah. And you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And what we've seen again and again in American life is that when people are in any way, even subtly encouraged to fight against a consensus, a rule of law, chaos results.
You know, in a recent meeting with Biden, it was reported that you and others were basically talking about the fragility of American democracy at the moment, and that there was a comparison in the conversation raised to the period leading into the Civil War. Now, I weighed those words, you know, I didn't hesitate, but thought carefully before I did it. And then, you know, I knew Donny was going to talk about these posts where people are saying they're ready for civil war. I mean, these words are being bandied about. Are we in a place now, John, where fears of civil war are not just words or exaggeration or hyperbole, but now more real?
I would say that what is real is civil chaos, which might be a little more accurate. Where the 1850s come into this is when you go back and you read the actual real-time record, the newspapers in the South, the cornerstone speech that Alexander Stevens, the vice president of the Confederacy, delivered, talking about the ability, the mission of the Confederacy, which was to become a white supremacist government, that the cornerstone of the Confederacy was to be slavery and white superiority. When you read that, you realize that it wasn't just a conflict of ideas and about policy. It was a conflict of visions of human nature and human equality and reality itself. And self-righteousness is a very, very pernicious thing. We all know that in our own lives and in the life of the nation. And so I think that the more people believe that their entire way of being, their entire identity is tied up in the minute-to-minute political developments, we are at greater risk. And the great thing about the country is, in extremis, we have tended to see politics not as total war, but as a mediation of differences. And what we're seeing right now, and you're covering it day to day, is you have this unfolding assault on the rule of law. Yep. You also have, and President Biden, as you pointed out, President Biden's my friend, I help him when I can, so take this in that context. He's governing. This has been a remarkable period of making a very divided country take actual concrete steps toward a future that a lot of people want and that a majority of people in the United States voted for 2 years ago.
So, you know, I wonder, though, former President Trump has made many inflammatory claims about the search and the FBI, right? And he's put out things that are completely untrue. He's called it an attack and a siege and all sorts of things, okay? So I want to make that very clear. According to the New York Times, after news of the raid, though, he also sent a message to Attorney General Merrick Garland. So this was a private message. That message was, quote, "The country is on fire. What can I do to reduce the heat?" Obviously, publicly, he was inflaming it. But that's what he said. And one of his staunchest allies, Congressman Louie Gohmert, appealed for calm in another backhanded way. But his comment was, "To Republicans and libertarians of good heart and conscience, do not let this lawless government provoke violence." Right. So a slap on one side, but a call against violence. So I understand it may be hard to take them seriously, John, but I do raise a serious question off of this. Do the people who started the fire even have the power to put it out at this point?
It's a great question, and we're going to live that question from day to day and week to week right now. I don't know is the answer. As you say, the thing about, a lawless government, don't fight back against a lawless government when the government took pains to absolutely follow the law. And so if we're going to make it through this, let me just put it this way. If we're going to make it through this, then Republicans, independents, Democrats, but the problem is on the right at the moment. The problem could be a problem on the left about lawlessness tomorrow, but there's not one today. So let's talk about the facts as they are in front of us. If they see the politics, if they see this as entirely an avenue, a machine for their power, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. They're holding primacy of the moment. If power is all, then ends justify the means. And what I think citizens have to do is take a moment, judge things for yourself. But just because someone with a platform says something does not make it true. And just because someone who has held the presidency says something does not make it true.
Yeah.
And so my sense is, If you love this country, you have to love it even when you lose, and you have to love it even when your heroes do something wrong, and you have to put the country itself above these appetite-driven instincts for power. And I think that's what we're seeing. And so it's an immense test. It's the gravest test of our lifetime of citizenship. Are we willing to see each other as neighbors and not as enemies?
All right, John Meacham, thank you very much for your thoughts, your perspective. I appreciate it. And next, all eyes on Alan Weisselberg, Trump's former CFO, the man who knows where, quote, all the bodies are buried. We've heard it again and again. Well, the Manhattan DA has charged him and Trump Org in its investigation. His next move. And Florida Governor Ron DeSantis making a huge splash on the national stage with rallies scheduled across the country. Is this the beginning of a 2024 run? Tonight, all eyes on longtime Trump Organization CFO Alan Weisselberg and the Manhattan DA's probe, where he faces tax fraud charges. And the question is what his next move could be, because it comes after Donald Trump spent hours pleading the fifth in the New York Attorney General's civil probe into the Trump Org. These are just two of many looming investigations that has the former president facing possible legal jeopardy. Tom Foreman is out front.
With legal battles raging all around Team Trump, the news out of New York is not good for the former president. Just days ago, he squared off against nearly a dozen assistant attorneys general on allegations he fraudulently raised the value of his company to get favorable loans, then dropped it to pay less in taxes.
Mr. Trump, how do you feel?
Trump calls it a witch hunt, yet he reportedly took the Fifth hundreds of times, despite a history of ridiculing those who do the same.
The mob takes the Fifth. If you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment?
A similar probe by the Manhattan District Attorney is also still alive. In Georgia, a top political ally, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, has been ordered to testify about Trump's failed effort to overturn his 2020 election loss in the Peach State.
I just want to find 11,780 votes.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, has been told he is a target and has been ordered to meet with the grand jury there this week. Those close to the losing candidate insist they did nothing wrong, but questions have been raised about the legality of their pressure on state officials.
We are going to look at everything until that investigation is complete.
And heavy legal fire is coming from Washington, D.C., too.
The search warrant was authorized by a federal court.
The seizure of reportedly classified documents from Trump's Florida home has triggered sharp questions for Trump and for the Justice Department from some Republicans.
Show us the goods. We need to determine, is this a national security threat?
We fight like hell.
But there is so much more. A federal grand jury is scrutinizing Trump's efforts to overturn the election. And Justice, along with the January 6th Select Congressional Committee, is looking at Trump's role in the attack on the U.S. Capitol, for which he is also being sued by several police officers injured in the violence. Many of these cases could ultimately lead to Trump allies being charged in a criminal way, and maybe Trump too. That was once considered unthinkable for a former president. But then a former president who would urge his followers to believe a lie, to push back against it, to refuse to accept that he simply lost the election. Yeah. Aaron, that was considered unthinkable, too.
It was. All right, Tom Foreman, thank you very much. And next, the Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has made a big jump. And it's a big jump off the diving board, the national stage, campaigning for Republicans across the country. Is he setting the stage for a presidential run? And an update on the effort to bring home American Alex Drewke, who was captured in Ukraine. Tonight, Ron DeSantis on the national stage, the Florida governor on a cross-country tour, campaigning for Republicans ahead of the midterms. Amid talk, he may be planning a 2024 presidential bid. He's hitting Ohio and Pennsylvania, and also New Mexico and Arizona. Kyung Law is out front in Scottsdale, Arizona.
East meets West in a show of a united Republican front. The headliner of this Arizona rally, Florida governor and possible 2024 hopeful Ron DeSantis.
From the beaches of Florida to the deserts of Arizona, November 8th, 2022 is going to be the day that America fights back.
To energize this Phoenix crowd, DeSantis turned his political fire to the news in his state. The FBI search of Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate.
They're enforcing the law based on who they like and who they don't like. That is not a republic. Well, it may be. It's a banana republic when that happens.
Echoed by Republican nominee for Arizona Governor Carrie Lake, heavy on grievance, light on facts.
And then these people sent politically motivated federal agents to President Donald Trump's home and raided it. How dare they?
This is the first large political rally since the Mar-a-Lago search.
How much is that affecting Republicans who are going to be voting this year in the midterms?
Well, I hope it's a lot. I hope it ignites people, gets them out there, and they want to help support the Republican ticket.
After what happened on Monday, we have to show our support for the president, the real president anyway.
here in Arizona, where Trump's 2020 election lie still thrives in a big swath of the GOP. His endorsed candidates swept in the state's primary. Carrie Lake defeated a Republican backed by former Vice President Mike Pence and the establishment.
The Republican Party isn't your great-great-grandfather's party anymore.
U.S. Senate candidate Blake Masters is also Trump endorsed.
It will be Arizona first and America first all the way.
The proof is in the primary, say voters in this crowd, that the more centrist Arizona Republican Party of John McCain is gone.
We feel McCain is a total traitor. I believe he was a rhino.
In this theater, party unity and its success in November is under the banner of Trump.
I spoke with the Democratic nominee for Arizona Governor, Katie Hobbs. She disagrees that leaning in on Trump will help the candidates win in November. A third of the registered voters in Arizona are independents. And Hobbs believes by directly speaking to them, Aaron, that is who will be successful in November. Aaron.
It'd be such a race to watch. Thank you so much, Kyung. And next, the family of American Alex Drewke. He was captured in Ukraine. And they're hoping that this event related to dogs, we'll tell you about it, can help bring him home. And finally tonight, an update to a story we've been following closely. The capture of Alex Drewke, an American held by pro-Russian forces in Ukraine. His family just hosted a dog adoption event with the goal of raising awareness about prisoners of war. Alex and his colleague Andy Tynock-Quinn have been missing for 67 days. And the event comes on the heels of a phone call between Alex Drewke, his mother, Bunny, and the State Department. It is a cause that hits home for Drewke. He has his own dog, Diesel, and his mother says that Alex asks about the dog whenever he has been able to talk to them. She hears the excitement in his voice about seeing him when he comes home. Thanks so much for joining us. AC 360 starts now.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, host of the Chasing Life podcast. In honor of our 10th season, we want to hear from you. Leave us a message at 470-396-0832. And tell us how you chase life. It could be used on an upcoming episode.